Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill. With natural foods, they support organic, vegan, paleo, and gluten-free lifestyles. Learn more about their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45 from Bertus Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And we're back after a two-week hiatus because of random crap. I was in, I was in Dublin. I was in China working on Spinzalls. But we're back, and we have, as usual, Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I noticed that you have your bike helmet, and it's hot as hell out here.
No, I went to Union Square in the night.
I was going to say, but still, I mean, like, the only reason to bike in this weather is because you want to increase your hatred for mankind. Mm-hmm. To bike in New York. I mean, like, to bike in New York City in this weather, I'm fine with it, right? I mean, it's fine. Except for, like, every second on the bike. I mean, in other words, your gas tank of hatred must have been damn near empty. So for you to, like, get on the bike to top up that much hatred. You know what I mean? Maybe, I'm sure at lunchtime I'll be, you know, treated to some of the classic Nastasia invective, right?
Yeah, no, I went slow.
Still. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like riding the subway lowers that hatred either.
That's true.
Right. That's true. Oh, my God. Especially these days. And in the booth, we got Dave. How you doing?
What up? Good.
So, Nastasia and I have a question. So, there's a relatively new Heritage Radio Network t-shirt over here. It says Heritage Radio Network, food radio since 2009. It's got a cow skull and, like, some sort of Star Wars, like, X-Wing fighter targeting grid.
Yep.
So... I like it. Nastasia doesn't understand it, so
understand
she wants
it.
Yeah, she wants you to explain this t-shirt.
What don't you understand?
Like, what's with the cow head? What's with the grid? What's with it together?
It's just, we're all of those things.
You're a grid? I don't know, man. I like it, though.
I don't know. I think it's just a cool design. I don't think there was any real purpose behind it.
So how do people get their hands on this if they want it?
Well, if you go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate, you can become a member today and get a t-shirt like that.
Yeah, nice. Nice. I like that.
It has the Tron aesthetic.
Oh, that's it. The Citron aesthetic. You know
yeah,
what?
Maybe.
You know what the thing is? I was having this discussion with Jack Schramm, who is, you know, he's been on the show before. He's the, was the head bartender at Booker and Dax, and we're discussing the merits and demerits of having, you know, old school arcade games at bars. What are your thoughts, Dave? What are your thoughts on old school arcade games?
They're great. Why wouldn't you want to have that?
Well, it's a different vibe. It's a different vibe.
I mean, I don't think you should have them because it's too hipster, but what you should have is the log.
Wait, hold on. Too hipster? That's not a reason. Like, what does that mean?
It's like...
I mean, am I a hipster?
No.
Do I like them?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, I grew up with it, but like...
Just have the log in the nail game.
I'm not allowed to have the log in the nail game. Everybody... Okay, so for those of you that don't know, I mean, we've talked about it on the show probably a million times. I don't know. But there's a game that Nastasia and I played
against Peter
ago.
And we kicked his butt.
Yes, Peter Kim, favorite object of derision here on the show. We love it. I mean, like, look, you know what I mean?
We love him.
Yeah, so the issue is that we were driving up from, what was it, Chicago we flew into?
Yeah.
Chicago to Madison, Wisconsin to visit with Johnny Hunter, friend of the show. And, you know, the Underground Meats Collective back in the day. And we stopped at this German place in Milwaukee that had the Log Game. Don Lee went back there recently and got me a T-shirt. You see my T-shirt, right? My Log Game T-shirt. So anyway, they give you an old cut masonry, you know, a cut nail, steel nail, like this big triangle one. And then you have to knock it into this big old stump. And whoever takes the longest to knock it in, basically the most number of blows to knock it in, they buy the next round of drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to say that Peter was trounced, but he was completely trounced. But the thing about it is that, like, I was like, I want one of those, but then everyone's like, you can't do that.
Why?
In New York, because if you hit the, first of all, people are drinking, and if you hit the nail even a little bit wrong, a nail goes flying across the room, like flying across the room.
Then how
that's a good
they
point.
Have one?
What?
How do they have one?
I guess in Milwaukee, like, people don't sue each other. Mm. I mean, it's more of like an old style.
They settle things the old fashioned way.
Right. I mean, imagine, like, look, everybody knows each other, right? I mean, this is the kind of place where people have their names on their mugs behind the counter, behind the bar. So it's like, I imagine that if anyone, like, if you and I went there and hit ourselves in the eye with a nail and we're like, we're going to sue, that, like, we would end up, like, at the bottom of the river. You know what I mean? Like, it just wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. So, anyways.
Any Milwaukee people in the chat room, feel free to chime in on that one.
Yeah. But but anyway, back to the kind of Tron aesthetic, not Tron specifically, but like early video games, I really love, and it's really hard to find, the old vector graphics games. You know what I'm talking about, Dave?
Well, yeah, and you mentioned Star Wars. There was that one at, I forget exactly what it was called, but at the public pool that I went to as a kid, they had that game where you were like, you know, flying in the Death Star, and it was all vector graphics.
Yeah,
it was so cool.
That's the original.
It was so hard to beat.
The original one, the 1983 Star Wars, is one of the all-time classic vector graphic games, and it was interesting because it was a color vector graphic because it was using all three tubes. So the interesting thing about a vector graphic game as opposed to a raster graphic is that in the vector graphic games, they're literally controlling the electron beams like in old CRT styles. This is why you can't emulate them accurately with – you can, but it's very hard – with modern kind of screens. They're literally drawing the lines with the electron beam, so you don't have pixels really. They're literally drawing the lines, and so it has this kind of amazing – you know, glow that looks very, very specific and very awesome. So you think your asteroids, your Tempest, anyway. But I would like a game like that. But you think that's too hipster? Hipsters don't care about that. They just want to play Dig Dug, right?
I don't know, but you have a cabaret
bartender game
license.
Wait, what did you say?
You have a cabaret license.
I don't have any license yet, people. We're not announcing where the new bar is going to be. We haven't accepted. I will say this: Don Lee and I and our other partner Greg have an accepted offer, right? Someone has accepted our offer on a space, which means that I feel more confident than I have in the past because I've never had an offer that was accepted by all parties that we will have a space that we can announce in the near future. But I can't. Yes.
Don't jinx it.
Yeah. Do you believe in that? Do you believe in that?
No.
No?
I only believe in it when we're in traffic and someone's like, we're almost home. This is so. Or when we're not in traffic.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like,
What's the origin of the word jinx? Is there some sort of stupid racial slur in that?
Probably.
I don't know. What does it mean? Where does jinx come from?
It's about gypsies, right?
No, that's. You can't use that. First of all, no, I don't think so. You're thinking of the slur based word to rip someone off, which when I was growing up, we had no idea that it was a slur.
Yeah, that was so common. Who knew?
I did not. And then someone was like, Dave, you can't say that. I'm like, why? I'm like, because of this. I'm like, oh. And so you can't, you should not do that. Okay, so we got a boat ton of questions to get to because I've been out of business here.
Well, you should talk about big things first, right?
What?
To get it out of the way. Centrifuge.
Oh, spins. Let's do the spins all stuff towards the end.
Have enough time.
We'll do it at the end or in the middle. How about this? We'll do it in the middle. We'll do it right when we come back from the break.
Not going to have enough time to even take a break.
What?
Oh, yes, we are.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I got to do some goodness.
You're on it.
We got to pay those bills.
You got to pay those bills. So, Nastasia, you have any good food recently?
No.
I had some good food. What do you mean, no? Why would you not have it?
Because you're like, let's get to questions.
Yeah, but I like, you know, curious whether you've
No, I haven't.
We got to transition from gaming issues to cooking issues somehow.
That's right. Dave, anything interesting?
I'm eating a nice cup of yogurt right now. It's pretty good.
Come on. How good can the yogurt be? What is it? Like, what the hell?
It's just, you know, whatever. It's full fat, I should say, because you got to have full fat.
What brand is it?
Am I allowed to say that on the air? It's Paille.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just what's in the corner store.
Did Bobby Flay convince you to buy that?
No.
You bought it without Bobby Flay? Did Bobby Flay's endorsement...
Do you follow Angry Bobby Flay on Twitter?
I don't. I should.
Yeah, he's funny.
Is it the real Bobby Flay?
I don't think so. I'm like 99% sure it's not.
Okay. I had some interesting food when I was in China. I had one interesting thing, I should say. And we went to this restaurant. It's actually the second time I've been to this straight... Okay, so Shenzhen, Nastasia, is like 13 million people in Shenzhen, mm-hmm. right? 13 million. Even though the city's only like 40 years old, 13 million people there. And for some reason, two separate people brought me to the same freaking restaurant that the expats like in Shenzhen. What are the odds of that?
Crazy.
It's crazy, right? So I went there, but I had this really, really good kind of like semi-fusion eggplant dish that I'm going to figure out how to make, because it was a grilled eggplant, but it was completely flat, like super garlicky, super buttery, and like lots of chili. And then they put like, which is this fusion-y, they put, well, first of all, I guess the butter, but then they put bonito flakes on top. So so it had that, like, you know, you've had bonito pizza before, right? Mm-hmm. Where this stuff, it was like that, but it was really good eating style. So I'm gonna work on that as soon as I get back to Connecticut and have a grill that I'm gonna work with. Then maybe I'll adapt it for a regular place recipe, you know, where you don't need a grill. But anyway, I was psyched on that. Anyway, okay. And that would have been, if we were talking about the spins all now, an entree, because I was in China. Do you ever flown? So this is the first time in my life I've flown all the way around the world, like all the way around. Like I flew from New York to Dublin to then to London, then to Frankfurt, then to Hong Kong, then back to Newark.
Wow.
Kind of sad to fly all the way around the world and end up in Newark, huh? No offense to Newark. No offense to Cory Booker and, you know, Newark and all that. But, I mean, come on. Newark. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Newark. Dave, you're not a fan of Newark, are you? I mean, you're not against Newark, right?
Yeah, I guess I'm ambivalent.
Yeah, all right.
Trenton, on the other hand.
What do you have against Trenton?
No, I just love the sign.
Oh.
Trenton makes, the world takes.
Oh, yeah?
Love that sign.
What's the one near the turnpike that's like, world capital of embroidery? You seen this one? You've seen this one, right, Nastasia? There's like one of the towns.
Right before the Lincoln Tunnel.
Well, yeah. World capital of embroidery. Yeah. You're like, wow, who knew?
Oh, it's got to be Bayonne, right?
I don't know. I love all of those town names. Passaic. You know what I mean? Like
Hohokus.
Secaucus.
Mawa. Ramapo. Like all these like words over there. You know what I mean? It's like... Mawa. Okay. Eddie Donnell wrote in on the Twitter... question is, he's making a walnut ketchup recipe, so you're using your unripe, your green walnuts, and you're making, so ketchup obviously originally wasn't, you know, Heinz-style ketchup. In other words, it wasn't tomato-based sauces in general. There was mushroom ketchups, there was everything, blah, blah, blah. And in fact, if you go back, even modern, right, the phenomenon that took the New York culinary scene by storm like 8 years ago, ketchup manis, right, is ketchup manis. It's like that sweetened kind of soy thing, which is, I think, is delicious. Remember when Nils and I used to put ketchup anise in everything?
Yes.
Like, what does this need? Ketchup anise. You know what I mean? It's like everything. So ketchup was a more generic thing. Now, of course, ketchup is, what's the brand of ketchup, Dave?
Yeah?
What brand of ketchup do you use?
Oh, Heinz, obviously.
There you go. So it's like, because that's Heinz ketchup, and everything else is, in other words, everything else is just a different sauce that is, in other words, even if you're not a huge fan of Heinz, which I don't understand why you wouldn't be, because Heinz ketchup is delicious, but if you weren't a fan of Heinz ketchup, you would still rate other ketchups relative to Heinz. You know what I'm saying? You would say, it's like Heinz, but thinner. It has the flavor of A1, but the texture of Heinz, which doesn't happen, right?
Right.
Anyway, so ketchup used to be a more all-inclusive thing, and there are old recipes for mushroom ketchup, which I made. It was okay. It wasn't great. Did I give you that ever when I made that?
I was told last weekend that Sir Kensington's was the same as Heinz at dinner by someone, and I got so angry.
Enemy of quality.
Were they a food person?
They work in food.
As what? As a cashier?
I didn't have my rim shot sound ready.
like what? Like what's their?
They are in food. They are in food media.
Food media. Yeah. They write about food.
That's opposite of food.
They do production, like film production.
Oh,
they work with Food Network people. Right. They know from food.
They know how to take pictures of food.
They know everything about food, but in this case,
how could they say same as?
Same as, just no high fructose corn syrup was their thing, and I was like, I don't care.
I seriously don't care. I know. But like, well, my point is that like
not the same.
It's
not,
like
not ketchup.
Like, you know what? Well, I'm not going to go that far because you know what? I have to be honest. I don't know that I've had their ketchup as a tasting, but of course it's not the same. Nastasia Lopez, Peter Kim, same. Same.
Low quality.
Same. You know, the only difference is there is no difference. They're the same person, right? They both have two eyes.
Wow.
Nose, mouth.
Cold diss.
Full sets of digits.
That is the coldest of disses since Peter Kim is like...
Well, who's that a diss to, though?
Me.
But my point being, like, it's ridiculous to say it's the same, and whoever that was should be ashamed of themselves. They were just trying to piss you off.
No, they were not. They weren't. We don't have that relationship.
I have a friend who honestly believes Hunt's is better than Heinz.
You're allowed to believe these kinds of things as long as you don't think they're the same. It's like if you say they're the same, that's when I'm like, well, nothing you say has merit. Like, you're willing to just stand up there and say things that are false.
Alternative facts.
Yeah, alternative facts. It's like, you know, anyway. So this is an alternative ketchup. It is not meant to be a substitute for the Heinz style of ketchup. So a recipe is about 50 green walnuts, some salt, some two different kinds of vinegars there. You got your malt vinegar and your cider vinegar. And of course, this is one of those recipes that was clearly written by someone because it's partially in cups, partially in ounces, partially in teaspoons, one of those. Malt vinegar, cider vinegar, anchovies, onion, red wine or port, ground nutmeg, black pepper, cayenne, grated horseradish, ginger. And here's the problem. Here's what Eddie was wondering about. Xanthan gum. So the issue with this is that you macerate the walnuts in this vinegar melange for a while, and then you heat it up, and then you strain it out, and there's solids in it, right? And it's thin, like Worcestershire sauce thin, right? So it's not at all like a kind of a modern kind of ketchup that we would have. It's not thickened because it doesn't contain any real like fruit pulp. Remember, tomato being a fruit. So the... His question is, isn't that going to make it snotty? Now, I didn't have time to do the calculations on this or look up how much a teaspoon of xanthan gum weighs, but you definitely don't want to add enough xanthan to this ketchup to make it snotty. I think, like I've said many times on the show, there are cultures...
Spain.
Where, like, you're allowed to have really snotty xanthan textures and, like, it's kind of accepted. But obviously here in the U.S., we don't appreciate snot sauce so much. You know what I mean? Which is why a lot of people have problems with okra-based sauces. Nastasia, do you like kind of snotty okra?
No.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, see? There you go. Have you been to Spain? Do you enjoy snotty Spanish sauces?
I have not, but I think I would.
They're not. By the way, I'm just being harsh. Like back when the modern wave was hitting like real hard on all cylinders, like in like 2004 in the U.S., a lot of like super modern people were using a lot of xanthan. So I'm not saying traditionally Spanish food has xanthan because, of course, it's not a traditional ingredient. I'm just saying when those very high end chefs were making thickened sauces, you know, in that era, in that 04, 03, 04, 05 era, they didn't have any qualms about using a good bit of xanthan. That's all I'm saying. I'm not making any comments about traditional Spanish cooking. So, yes, but when you read the recipe, Eddie, the xanthan is really, it's not there to thicken. That is not a thickening agent. They are using the xanthan as a suspending agent. So there's lots of fine particles in this, you know, walnut ketchup that will settle out over time. And a small amount of xanthan, and now we'll add some kind of surface. So if you were going to drink it as a beverage, you would kind of notice that it has a little bit of that jiggle to it. But if you're keeping the amount of xanthan very low, like, you know, well under a quarter of a percent. And I have to like test I have to look at this and see, you know, what they're talking about. I think you should be fine. It's going to suspend, but it's not there to thicken. It's there to suspend. If you want to thicken it, I definitely would not thicken it with xanthan gum, well under a quarter percent. In fact, let me see what I was thinking. So if you're using 3 grams of 0.6, I have to do the calculations, but you only want just enough to suspend. You can do it by testing and add a little more. Remember not to add a boat ton of xanthan at once, even when you're working with very small amounts, because it will hydrate over time. And so if you try to thicken alaminute with xanthan, a lot of times you'll find that 10, 15 minutes later, because you haven't hydrated it properly at the get-go, you've over-xanthaned it, and then you're in snotville. So small amount of xanthan is just there to suspend. If you want to thicken it, I would use something else. Like, for instance, if you thought that maybe a fruit might be nice in there, choose like a less sweet fruit that has a lot of body to it, and you could cook that into it. But to really get it to be thick, you'd need to add something that has bodying. So I wouldn't necessarily thicken it with. I mean, you could thicken it with something like. Like LBG, I guess, or one of these things. But the problem is anytime you thicken something, you really deaden the flavor out, right? If you're thickening it with a thickener and you're basically turning it into a more solid, it has a tendency to lock in flavor and kind of inhibit flavor release. So anyway, that's my feeling. What do you think, Stas?
Yes.
Stas is like, guess what, Dave? Don't care. Claire wrote in. Yeah, Claire wrote in, but not your Claire, right?
Weird.
This is a different Claire.
I don't know. No, it's probably not my Claire.
This Claire cares about food. I'm just being mean. I still can't believe someone who works in food said that, like, that they're the same.
I know.
Were they...
Name names.
No, I can't.
Name names.
I can't.
Which company were they trying to insult?
Heinz.
They're trying to insult Heinz?
Not insult. Just very, like, calm. Like, oh, yes, try Sir Kensington's. It's the same. With no high fructose corn syrup.
Why wouldn't they just say try Sir Kensington's, I like it?
Yeah, I think they said I like it too somewhere.
Oh yeah, that would have been fine. If they said I like it, then that's a valid opinion.
Fine.
Because it's an opinion.
Right, yeah, that's passable. But to say it's the same,
that's just not right.
Not right.
Try this Peter Kim. It's the same as Nastasia Lopez. You know what I mean? It's like my sister and I have become rather obsessed with the flavor of habanero and manzano peppers. I've never really worked with manzano peppers before, but they are a medium sweet, a medium hot, like, you know, hotter than a jalapeno, but not anywhere near a habanero hot. But supposedly kind of very fruity, has a lot of those kind of fruity floral notes that you get from a habanero. But again, I don't know, because I've never really worked with them. We've been trying to create a dish where the sweet floral flavors of these peppers come through and are not overwhelmed by the spice. We thought a buttercream frosting for cupcakes might do the trick, since it has such a high fat content that could counteract the spiciness. However, we had some problems getting enough of the pepper flavor into the frosting to be detectable. Adding blended up peppers at the end results in a buttercream that is kind of sweaty and too watery. What do you think about this? Sweaty.
Gross,
right? Sweaty.
Sweaty peppers.
Sweaty peppers.
Sweaty peps.
Sweaty peps. But you do, you like sweaty balls because you love Alec Baldwin. You love Alec Baldwin.
I do love Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Do you know that Nastasia Lopez went to Alec Baldwin's wife's yoga class to be closer to
it's
Alec
good.
Baldwin?
It's actually good, I have to say.
Yeah?
It's one of the few good ones.
Did it smell like sweaty balls?
Sweaty balls. The buttercream is kind of sweaty and too watery, but only just barely tastes of pepper. We serve this stuff at a family occasion, and nobody actually noticed the pepper taste at all. So, well, the answer there is just put more freaking pepper in. I'm kidding. I am, but I'm not. Okay, so our second attempt was to actually infuse the egg whites for the buttercream with the peppers for a while to get the flavor in that way. We let chopped up peppers sit in egg whites for about 24 hours, about a cup of chopped up peppers with three egg whites. We did three types of peppers, habanero, manzano, and chilaca peppers, which are milder. Basically, the egg whites with the chilaca peppers in them whipped up fine, but didn't have much of the pepper taste. But the egg whites from the manzano and the habanero peppers were fairly flavorful, but completely failed to whip up at all. We even tried cutting them with fresh egg whites, and no luck. What's going on here? Is the capsaicin disrupting the egg white proteins, or is there just so much more oil in the habaneros and manzanos than in the chilacas? Is there anything we can do to combat this, or some other way to get that lovely pepper flavor into our frosting? Thanks for the show. I've been listening to all your back episodes while driving across the country as I move from Connecticut to Vancouver. That's a long move.
It's a long move.
Long move. You ever been to Vancouver?
Mm.
I like Vancouver.
Great.
It's nice. You know what the problem with Canada is? Booze price too high.
Oh.
Wait, what did Nastasia say?
Canadians.
Oh.
They're our worst customers.
They're not our worst customers.
Customers, please.
Canadians aren't bad customers. Canadian customs are a pain in the ass.
No, it's not that.
Europeans are bad customers.
It's not that.
What is it?
No, Europeans are fine. Canadians.
Jeez. Anyways, I would say I don't know. It was interesting. I tried to look into Surface. I did a brief search on Surface Active properties of peppers. I was not able to find that. If I was looking into I couldn't find anything specifically on whipping egg whites and capsaicin or any of this stuff. So I wasn't able to find anything specific, but it sounds like from your test that, you know, that there is something with these hotter peppers that's probably messing with the egg whites. So my feeling is that you might want to move on to a different kind of buttercream frosting, one that doesn't require whipped egg whites. So a good place to start in terms of like figuring out what you want to do is Nyla Jones has a it was like three or four years ago did something on the Serious Eats called The World of Buttercreams, six varieties to try at home, and just goes through the various different kinds of ones. But I think the one that stands out that I think you might want to try for this is the kind of flour based. So you make what amounts to a roux with milk. And then you heat that with the flour and with flour, making like literally like a roux. And then you let that roux cool down. You make sure the skin doesn't form, and you beat that into the butter. And that is a prime candidate, assuming that the hot peppers don't break the milk, which I haven't tested whether super hot peppers will break the milk, but I don't think they will. You can get that pepper flavor into the milk, and there's a fairly high quantity of milk per unit butter. So I think you could do well to get a good kind of flavor into your buttercream that way. Now, I'd always thought you just made a straight kind of milk flour kind of a roux, even though it's not butter, but kind of a roux. You just have to make sure you blend the hell out of it so it doesn't have you don't want like starch particles in it. You want to make sure that you know like either slurry the flour with the milk or you know, just make sure that you break it up before you heat it. Otherwise, you're going to get clumping. And obviously, you have to cool it all the way or it's going to mess up the butter after you put it into the whipped butter. But what's interesting is she actually adds the sugar to the milk mixture and doesn't cream the sugar into the butter and then add the stuff. And she says that it's a much smoother result than you would get if you fluffed up the butter, creamed the sugar into it. And then added this stuff, which is interesting. So I had never thought about that before. But I would do that kind of situation because I feel that you'd definitely be able to get a very heavy pepper flavor into a milk base and then whip into the buttercream. What do you think?
Good.
So I was like, again, don't care. All right.
Sounds legit.
Dave, look at this.
What? Oh, yeah. Nastasia, I think rightly so, loves any sort of new hot mess of a server that we get here at Roberta's. And you want to describe this?
I can't.
You can't?
It's kind of like a German type thing, right?
Like Kraftwerk?
Yeah.
Like, I listen to Kraftwerk. But the, I don't know, like the... Speaking of which, it's a weird day in New York.
It's
like
hot
when
and
I was
gross.
When I was walking here in Bushwick, it was like I can't describe everything because there's no polite way to describe everything I saw on the way over. But it was like I was living just that brief walk from Flushing Avenue over here through Bushwick was like living in a Terry Gilliam movie.
I don't know what it is.
Like Time Bandits or like Brazil.
12 Monkeys.
Yeah, like in other words, like there were like crowds gathered around dead rats. There was a giant set of hands coming out of the back of a pickup truck that were attached to a giant white Buddha head. There was just like, there was trucks parked in the middle of the road on the street here, more like big trucks just parked, and then cars driving on the sidewalk, like some backwards reality, like, and other things that literally I cannot mention on the air. It was like living in one of those movies. I was like, wow.
Family show.
Summertimes. Sometime in New York. So Mark writes in from Pittsburgh, PA, who I guarantee you Mark from Pittsburgh.
He likes Heinz.
Yeah.
He's not sitting there like, you know, telling us someone else that it's the same. Man, this server really is kind of messed up.
Explain it, Dave.
I can't. Hey, look. I don't know. He's not messed up. He just has a look. He has a very specific look. You know what I'm saying? Like super specific look. Like here, Dave, what do you think about this? My feeling on is like a place like Roberta's is interesting because
I love it here.
Yeah, place like I love it here. Like, what are you, the Manchurian candidate for Roberta's? Jesus. What I'm saying is that Roberta's is interesting because it was built on this idea of we're like going to do whatever we want, like rock and roll, blah, blah, blah. Right.
Sure.
Right. So like I think Roberta's can pull it off. Like Roberta's basically you can do almost anything you want like that. But I mean, I think not everyone can pull that off. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just it's interesting. Like I like looking around at places as we're looking to open the new bar. I'm just looking at kind of what, you know, what you as a place, the culture that you make in a place, like what that gives you permission to do with your customers, but also at the same time kind of how that can guide your future. So here it's like, okay, look, like establishment is kind of rock and roll vibe. We're just going to do it. And it's kind of a miracle that this place...
It's been here for, what, over 10 years, right?
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's, like, flourished. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
yeah.
So and started with this kind of, like, you know, like, the odds when you started that it was going to be successful, right? With it, with, I don't know. I don't know what the odds are. But it's kind of amazing that it, like, flourished into this kind of huge thing. But now there's a place where, yeah, you can have cutoffs, you know, you can wear, be a dude wearing cutoff shorts so short that I can basically see your junk and, like, you know, wear, like, you know, a bunch of, like, super tight choker necklaces and, like, I can see your midriff and, like, all this other stuff. You can do that as a server at Roberta's.
Which is what we just saw.
And your customers aren't like, wow, your junk is up in my face with those hyper short cutoff shorts. They're just like, oh, it's Roberta's.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
you're buying into that experience.
Right. Right.
Show me your junk.
Show me your junk. But the thing is I think that that's fine, but it's just great. You know, it's the interesting thing is that, like, how many places can do that? You know what I mean? Like, how is it that the culture you choose at the beginning of starting your restaurant allows you, or your bar allows you, to do certain things, but I think also can shackle you, right? Because, well, you can't do other things. Like, if you make a choice to be this kind of rock and roll, that you can't all of a sudden be like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to spiff it up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? We're going to...
Yeah, you can't.
You know what Dave Chang famously said, right? He said, Dave Chang said, you can be a 100 millionaire and still be a good person, but the minute you become a billionaire, you must have killed someone to get there. That's his theory.
True.
Yeah, you think so? But he hangs out with billionaires now.
I don't think so.
Hey, you want to take a call?
Yeah, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, absolutely love your show. Oh, hi, everybody. Hi, Natasha.
Hi.
Natasha, you come from Covina, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Whoa.
Do you also like Good Burger, the movie?
You like that movie?
Don't like love.
How old are you?
Nastasia's leaning forward to address
this. How old
are
you?
Oh, I'm older than you. I'm Dave's age.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, Good Burger. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry. My son wants to get into welding. He's 16 years old. What do you suggest for a small stick welding rig?
Okay, this is a great question. It's a fantastic question, and I will say this. When I was learning to weld, they still made you do the very old school kind of thing, which is you start learning how to use an oxyacetylene torch, and then, you know, learn to cut with an oxyacetylene torch and ferrous metal, and then learn to braze and actually do torch welding. And from there, you graduated to welding with a stick welder. And from there, they taught you MIG welding. And then if you were lucky, you got to learn TIG, right? And so that's kind of the progression that we were taught. I never, you know, and I and by the way, Lindy, the compressed gas people, Lindy, have an old book, which is, I think, almost free, the oxyacetylene handbook, which I highly recommend you buy. I think it came out in the 40s or 50s. It's really cool. It's not up to date, obviously, but it has everything you need to know about torches if you care about torches, which, you know, why wouldn't you care about torches? I'm going to have to say that I don't know that I agree with the old school pedagogy. Now, if your child is the kind of person – so, like, let's say I was going to teach Dax, which I am, teaching Dax how to weld. I'm not taking him – I'm not making him do the stick and all that. I just went straight to MIG. And the reason I went straight to MIG is that, you know, you could teach all the safety and everything, but if you really want someone to get into it, and they're the kind of person that gets frustrated easily, like learning to do good work with a stick welder – is much harder than learning to do like decent work with a MIG, because a MIG is basically just like a hot glue gun for metal. So, and I think that you, obviously, I think you should learn a stick welder because it's going to give you kind of the control over the, you know, over your hands and over the metal and the melt puddle there, and it's really good. But I would say get a decent quality stick welder. I would also say that MIG welder. And I don't know kind of how much space you have or kind of what kind of power you have, but they make some decent now, like 125, 220, like that can go kind of in both on the small side. They're very portable. You know, it's very easy to get the kind of the gas hookups for them. And if it's that you don't want to worry about the gas, and that's why you're doing stick, Flux Core is also a good way to start with welding with a feeder. I just think it's a lot easier. But if you really want to start with a stick, I mean, I haven't used a stick on a daily basis in, it's got to be, 20 years now. I haven't used a stick on a daily basis just because I've always wanted to have access to a MIG welder. But I would say that, like, if it was modern, I would still teach how to learn how to use a torch. I would get a MIG welder, get them into the welding, and then after that, I would go to where I never actually went, which is I would get into TIG welding, because TIG welding is a real art, and you're going to learn a lot of the kind of control, patience, and you know, craft work with a TIG, like more than any other kind of welding, right? And so I think an entree into that, especially if it was going to be my teenage boys who, like, you know, are hard to kind of get to focus for a long time, especially if they're just practicing making weld beads one after another, I would go that way. The other thing to note is that you're going to want to get someone to teach them serious safety when they're learning to weld, and that doesn't just mean safety when they're welding. For instance, like making sure they don't get sunburnt from the arc, making sure that they don't burn themselves, making sure they don't weld onto things that have zinc and you know, get overcome by zinc fumes, you know, making sure they're kind of making sure that they don't catch fire to their surroundings. So there's all this safety, but there's the further safety of all of a sudden you can weld metal together, which means that you can make very large, very heavy, potentially dangerous things that can kill you. And frankly, I was not taught these things when I was taught to weld, because when they teach you to weld at a liberal arts college in art classes, they're, you know, they don't expect you to make big, giant, dangerous things that can kill you. And so if you don't have a thorough understanding of the theory of welding, it's very easy to do things like make a giant 1,000-pound spinning articulated kinetic sculpture where the main axle has been welded on with 110-volt welder in the bathroom of your dorm, and it looks like a good weld because you don't know you're behind from a hot rock, but instead you've really just crystallized weld on the outside and the two pieces of metal aren't joined, and the entire thing falls and just barely misses killing you by like fractions of an inch. Like, that is entirely possible if they don't have training in kind of what constitutes a good weld, how to evaluate a weld, making sure that you get good weld penetration and are using the you're not trying to go over the capacity of your welder. So that stuff I would kind of inculcate early, but I'm not necessarily a believer in having to start with the stick. Does this make any sense or no?
Yeah, that's, and you've addressed all my concerns, because I don't want him killing himself and I don't want him burning the house down.
Right.
But
so
I'm trying to find somebody to teach him, but it's all welding classes that are, you know, thousands of dollars. I'm trying to find somebody to teach him because I don't know how to do it. My husband knows a little bit about it, but trying to find somebody that just is like a hobbyist around here in South Florida is a little challenging.
Right. I would do like, you know, I would make sure that you look, the sparks in these things can cause, they fly a long way and they can go really far. Stick welding throws off.
Unfortunately, my husband's a wood crafter, so the garage is full of wood.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Get welding curtains, and just make sure that you've cleaned. The area doesn't have any stuff, and really the curtains can help if they go all the way down, because sparks do go a long way. Sticks tend to throw a lot of sparks because of the coating on the outside. Flux Core tends to throw more stuff off than straight MIG does. and you know, torches when you're cutting, obviously they're literally burning through the metal. They throw off a lot of stuff, and so you kind of really want to be you know, cognizant of that. You know, but that stuff can be made safe. But I'll tell you what, nothing is more goofy than a welding sunburn. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and it hurts like hell too. I mean, especially like I'm so fair that I, you know, the first couple times I sunburnt myself with a welder by letting a patch of skin stay, you know, for hours, you know, in an arc light, it makes you feel like a real moron. So I just be, you know, careful of that. Also, I would not get the cheapest possible MIG welder, because if the feeder mechanism is not very good, it's just you're going to get a lot of jams all the time, and it just is a real disincentive to learning. But okay. You know, get some books, do some research. There are probably some art people who will do it, where anytime they're teaching someone to do it professionally, it's going to be pretty hardcore and it's going to cost a lot of money. But you might be able to find someone who's doing it for art, and then I would just talk to them and, you know, make sure that they're serious about teaching, like, long-term safety in terms of what you're building and safety for yourself. I would do that. And that might be a lot cheaper.
There's an AI, an art institute up in Fort Lauderdale. Maybe I could get, like, a grad student or something
from
there.
Yeah, slip them some booze, slip them a couple bucks, and, you know, see what's going on. Just, you know, it's fun, it's awesome, but again, it just requires, like, a little bit of caution at the beginning so that you don't kill yourself down the road.
Yeah, I have another question too. I've got the tank. I'm doing my own seltzer now. Right. I've got the carbonator cap, but it's not holding the bubble past like the next day. Like it seems a little flat the next day.
Okay, so every time you take a sip, you just recharge it. So what you do is you take your bottles. You're not carbonating straight Florida water, are you? You have some sort of filter to get rid of the sulfur note.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're using filtered water.
Oh, thank goodness, Florida. I mean, no offense, but every Florida tap water I've tasted that's unfiltered is like horrible carbonated. Do you find this or no?
Terrible.
Yeah, horrible. Like horrible. So yes. Yeah, so that what you do is you make sure that the stuff's cold. Carbonate it. Usually water, unlike cocktails, really only requires a double carbonation to really get it ripping. I would keep your pressure somewhere in the area of around 35 to 40 PSI. Do it twice, and then after you pour your first glass, squeeze it, re-put the carbonator cap on, and give it a shake at full pressure again, and then it'll be as good as the first time on the next day. If you don't, there's nothing that's going to preserve it, because it's basically gassing off all that CO2 into the headspace of your bottle up to the pressure that it was in the bottle. And so you're constantly decreasing the amount of gas in. So I never put one back in the fridge that I haven't charged back up to full pressure with CO2.
Okay, cool. I'll try that. Thank you. And I took my daughter down for the first time to the Spice Park a couple weeks ago. So that was fun.
Awesome place, right?
That was fun.
Yeah. Anyone who's in South Florida, South Dade, go down to the Fruit and Spice Park. It's a state park. And make sure you go with someone who's going to let you steal some stuff off the trees. Remember, Stas, we went twice, and one time we could steal the stuff off the trees, and the other time we couldn't steal the stuff off the trees?
I was in England.
You didn't go the second time? Maybe you didn't go the second time. The time we went, we stole all the stuff off the trees. That's the thing, man. If you, like, because you're not a huge plant head. You're a flower head, not a plant head.
Vegetables.
You don't like vegetables. Plants. You like the vegetable.
I like vegetables.
Yeah, but you don't stare.
I'm not like you. Yeah.
You don't stare at the plant.
I don't stare at the plant.
You want the vegetable.
Yes.
What are you growing this year?
Lots of tomatoes, 16 different types.
I told you what happened to me last year with tomatoes, right?
Mine were bad, too.
No, I had giant plants. My plants were amazing. We didn't get one tomato because they were all eaten.
Oh.
Here, we should take a quick break.
All right, quick break. Come back with cooking issues. Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grains since 1978. One of the nice things about Bob's Red Mill is it's the only that I know of national supplier that's easily available for lots of interesting, hard-to-get grains and other seed products. So, you know, before Bob's Red Mill became widely available, you couldn't go get something like quinoa very easily, or you couldn't go get spelt easily in small quantities. But now you go to any one of the huge number of stores that
carry Bob's Red Mill, and you can get smaller amounts of these really interesting, fun things to play with. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast. And we're back. Mark from Pittsburgh wrote in about garlic. We won't talk about ketchup. We'll just talk about the question really quickly. Big fan of the show. Love my sears all. Looking forward to my spins all. Been cooking for many years in different facets, from fine dining to basic approachable catering. In a recent review of a blog discussing the dangers of vacuum sealing garlic, I was getting conflicting information regarding the safety of it, cooked versus uncooked. My question is to you, am I placing my guests or family in danger with the current practice I adopted of batch roasting pounds of peeled garlic? I salt, roast, blast, chill, and then toss with oil and place into half-pound vacuum bags and freeze. If I need it for a function, I can pull out the amount of bags that I need, have them at home. I can nip a corner and squeeze out the few cloves to puree, saute, smear on bread, and keep the rest frozen. Please reply via email if possible. I don't have the email. In case I missed a show, although that's highly unlikely, Mark in Pittsburgh, you're totally safe. Here's the thing. Garlic in oil is unsafe from a botulism perspective if you are going to keep it at room temperature. If you are going to store it at room temperature in an oxygen-deprived environment or anywhere near room temperature, botulism can grow. And the issue is cooking the garlic is not enough to kill the botulism, so that's unsafe. You, however, you're not making it less safe by cooking it. So if you're willing to take garlic, freeze it in a bag, and then eat it later, then cooking it is not going to make it less safe. In fact, it will make it more safe. It won't make it safe as a shelf-stable thing. So it's one of those things where as soon as you say garlic and oil, people are like, ah! You know what I'm saying, Stas? You seem to have, botulism, but you're not going to get botulism if the stuff's frozen. You're not going to kill the botulism by freezing it, but you're not going to get botulism either. So it sounds like your procedure is 100% good. Jeff Given wrote in, and I was going to go on a long thing about how to patent cooking equipment, but it looks like we're not going to have time because I'm going to do a spins all thing. Tim Rupar wrote in with a bunch of questions. I'll answer just this one. I'll answer the rest next week, but one question was... why Celsius? I understand metric measurements in weight and volume, but it seems like Fahrenheit is actually more precise than Celsius. And the answer is, well, not like it depends on what you mean by more precise. If you're going to cook to decimal degrees of Celsius, then I guess it doesn't really matter, right? Because you're cooking to decimal degrees of Celsius, and that's really precise, more precise than anyone needs to be. I think it's just a question of who you're talking to. So typically, you know, when I was doing a lot of work with my original kind of sous vide low temperature stuff, I was dealing with a lot of Europeans, and a lot of the recipes and people I were talking to were Europeans, and they all deal in Celsius. And so I started doing all of that kind of stuff in Celsius, but stuff that, you know, I've done since I was a child, I do in Fahrenheit because my mind speaks Fahrenheit. So there's no real reason. It's just as the world becomes more international, as our world in the Americas becomes more international, and you know, with the internet, it's easier to do a lot of these things kind of in Celsius. What do you think, Stas?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now Nastasia wants me to give the spins all update. So, for those of you who are just coming to this, is that the beginning of Lenny Kravitz? It ain't over till it's over.
No, definitely not.
Now I have that going through my head. Do you have that song going through your head? Dee 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 dee. You like that song? Are you a Lenny Kravitz fan or no?
I'm not a Lenny Kravitz fan. That's a good song.
That's a good song. Because it ain't over till it's over. Spins All is the world's first culinary centrifuge. And actually, it'd be interesting to talk next week about patenting and like what the patent procedure is like. Because I think people don't really understand, if they have an idea for a kitchen implement or anything else, kind of what it's like to go through the patent procedure and what it's like to actually start a business that way. So it's an interesting topic. So, you know, I could talk to Jeff about that or anyone if anyone's interested. But so here's where we are. We've gone through what's called pilot production, which means they have made the actual units with the actual parts, with the actual workers on the actual line that they're going to do the production run with. This week, they're taking that production, pilot production set that they've made. They made 40 on the pilot production, just the way they made 40 for what's called the engineering build run. And they're putting it through the test to make sure that they are going to withstand the quality controls that we're imposing on them for the mass production run. That testing should be done this week. The rest of the parts are in by the first week of August, and they are all going to get built between August 7th and August 10th. And so in anticipation of that, we've also decided – to ship the this batch directly from China to customers. And so we are opening up the orders again. When? Like tomorrow or the next day?
Yeah.
So if you place your order by – I haven't figured out what the actual cutoff date, but I think it's basically the manufacturing date by August 7th. We're going to open it up again. And if anyone wants to order one and they order it by – we're not 100% sure when the cutoff date is, but I think around August 7th. If you order it by then, you will get yours with the first batch that comes in until – obviously, we only have a fixed number, but if you order them, then you'll get – otherwise, you have to wait till October because we're going to put the rest on a boat and ship them over here on a boat to Modernist Pantry and Amazon to sell from here. Yeah, so that's do you want more on the update? We've been dealing with individual rotor balancing. So the stuff we're dealing with is like making sure all the individual rotors are balanced properly and, again, meet our QC. But everything's looking good. Everything's still on sketch. Yeah? Is that a good update, Stas? Yeah. Is that what you want to hear? Yeah. All right. And I'm going to be going to Tales of the Cocktail on Thursday. And on Friday, I'm actually going to do a Spinzall seminar at Tales of the Cocktail. And I will have there in the house one of the actual production units, as well as some of the engineering build units. So anyone who's going to be in New Orleans can come check it out. I'll probably Instagram out a few pictures. I have a couple pictures of the actual assembly line if people want to see it. But I don't know whether people actually want to see the assembly line or not. But anyway, that's Cooking Issues. Back next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.